Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 223.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we stand off the rusty barnacles that have built up on the democracy boat that is America. Give it a nice new paint job, and then let it sail smoothly and freely in the open waters to a more progressive and prosperous union. I am your host, Nikki Farsad, and we're voting, motherfuckers. We're already voting. Special shout out to Jamal, who lives in my box. He became a citizen earlier this year, and it's the first time he's voting, and he is so excited. Today, we will in fact talk about the horse race that is giving us good and bad butterflies. We will talk about the problem of free speech. And finally, what would a city look like if it were designed by women? I'm so excited by this panel. This is a fantastic panel designed for the very day that we are in. Joining us for the, I don't know, severalth time. She's an alumni of Fake the Nation because we love her so much because she's so funny. She's got an album called So You Just Out Here that you should absolutely be listening to. But she's so great. You guys, it's Shalewa Sharp. Hey, Shalewa.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, my God. I'm so good.
That's good.
You know, in the realm of things, I'm good. Our next panelist today. Oh, I was so excited to see her name to doing this show for the very first time. She's a documentary filmmaker. I've seen 2 of her films. She has many feature documentary films under her belt, but the 2 that I saw are called Journeys with George and Friends of God, which we were just talking before the show, is not one of her favorites of her oeuvre, but it was one of my favorites. And so there we already disagree. And her new film is called American Selfie. It's airing on Showtime on Friday, and it'll be on demand and all of that stuff. So you should absolutely watch it. I've seen the trailer. It's riveting, and it's perfect for our episode today. I feel like a lot of the stuff that is in that movie, you will be able to touch on. Folks, it's Alexandra Pelosi. Hey, Alexandra.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my God. So excited to have you on. So excited to have both of you on. Well, before we get into topics, I want to mention that we are taping on Wednesday, so that means all of the things that have happened until Wednesday are what we are thinking about. The debates are happening Thursday. And like last week, we will have a bonus episode for you on Friday where we cover the debates. So don't worry. We're not talking about the debates, but you will have a bonus, a Fake the Nation bonus in your earballs Friday. So let's get into topic number 1. So as you may have heard from such things as my intro mere seconds ago, we're currently doing democracy. So let me just first off open with a wide question of like, what are your current thoughts on the elections? Alexandra?
No, you can't start with me. First time to the show.
Shalewa, why don't you warm us up so Alexandra gets the rhythm of the show?
Oh, hooray for voting. I don't, you know, it's, I want to be as positive as possible. So if you are out there and you've already voted and you've taken your extremely adorable video of you dropping it off in a box.
Yes, love those videos.
You know, but no pictures of the ballots, because as we all know, that will disqualify you. And your ballots have not been set on fire. Kudos to you and where you live. To the rest of us who are waiting to do it in person, or to those of you who have, kudos to you for bringing all the snacks and umbrellas and chairs that you need to make it through the long wait.
Amazing.
Yeah, but for those who haven't gotten a chance to vote yet, you know, don't worry, your time is coming. And be as excited as you can allow yourself to be, and as hopeful as you can allow yourself to be. But I mean, otherwise.
Okay, again, we're realists here on Fake the Nation, but we're also optimists. In fact, we have a t-shirt that says we're only doing optimism in our store, so you could get that merch. And I don't love talking about polls, but I just happened to notice that Biden holds a 9-point lead over Donnie. It's mostly because of the coronavirus and inaction on a large-scale government front. I guess Donnie was on the campaign trail being like, you know, people are over coronavirus. It's dumb. It's over. You know what I mean?
Right.
It is not over. In fact, we have a third wave. Anyways, it's a good time in a lot of the country. They are struggling. He's even lost his advantage on economic matters, right? So voters are now evenly split on whether they have more trust in him or Biden to manage the economy. Although, as we all know here on Fake the Nation, they should have no trust in him because he has run his businesses into the ground. Alexandra, are any of these polls, like, how do you handle that kind of information? Like polls that may be kind of hopeful, but we shouldn't be that hopeful. We should just be active.
I actually think that the polls are the absolute worst part of democracy, because it gives you either a false sense of security, we've been through this before, or it gives you a certain confidence that you shouldn't have. Mm-mm. And I find it something that we should all just pretend don't exist. Just don't follow any of the polls, because I think people lie to pollsters. And I think that people that are, you know, if you voted for Trump, would you really admit that? Come on.
Right. There was that phenomenon. I can't remember what they called that phenomenon, but it's like embarrassed Trump voters or something. And that was a big phenomenon in 2016 polling.
Well, there are probably just so many more racists in this country than that they're not going to admit it. Right. Because who are you admitting you are? If you're going to vote for him, you hate women. You hate all people of all colors, all religions. So are you going to admit that to your neighbor or to an anonymous pollster that calls you on the phone? No, you're not. So that's why I don't trust the polls for one second. So I'm trying to just, like, come on. You said if we're going to have some toxic positivity here, we're just going to tune out all polls.
Oh, no, I'm not paying attention to polls at all. I don't trust them. I don't trust no numbers.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, since 2016, it feels like, you know, and also, I mean, I don't even mean to just say since 2016. I mean, since the nature, it used to be the polls were about people picking up hardwired telephones that were affixed to your wall or whatever, in which you had long cables so that you could go and have a conversation with your, you know, adolescent friend in another room away from the prying eyes of your mom, right? Like, that was telephones. And that just doesn't happen anymore. And so we just screen our calls. It's just not the same, right? So I think that the methods, obviously there's internet polls. There's a lot of different ways they're doing things now. And we're in that guinea pig phase, I think, still of being able to get respondents. Here's another question for you both. Have you sensed any complacency? I mean, Biden has been warning about complacency. From you and your circles, have you sensed any of that? Is that just something we're warning against, but it hasn't actually happened?
In my circle, what I'm seeing a lot of, and it could be because a a chunk of my circle is a little bit younger than I am. So they were already grumbling about having to vote for Biden in the first place. Sure. So there's a lot of, look, I'm going to vote for the dude, but I'm not happy about it. It's a little snarky in my circle. My circle is more snark towards it. But then I'm going to do it. Don't worry. But
let me guess. Comedians?
A little bit of comedians or a comedian adjacent. A lot of like young, hopeful people. is kind of what I'm seeing it as. It's like young and hopeful, not quite beat down yet. I still have a sheen of just like, I don't believe anything, and I don't think anything will get to any sort semblance of normal that we may have known before. So I'm just trying to get this dude out, and if Biden is who they're putting in front of me, I'm not happy about it either. But let's just go with it. But I'm not gonna sneaky squirrel. Some smack talk about him. You know what I mean? And so I that's mostly what I'm hearing. So I don't even know if, so in hearing that so much, I'm like, well, then I wonder what you're going to do when the ballot is in front of you.
Alexandra, can you tell us a little bit about your movie? Because what I want to know is, you know, part of this is we're here. We probably follow the news more than the average person. I'm going to say we definitely follow the news more than the average person. But out there in America, that's not necessarily what happens. There's a study that shows upwards of 80% to 85% follow politics casually or not at all. Just 15 to 20% follow it closely. And those are the people who are deeply involved. And so maybe our vision of what's happening is skewed. Alexandra, you've spent so much time out in the world in all of your films. And so tell us a little bit about American Selfie and what you've seen out in the world that might pertain to this.
Okay, but before I do that, I want to say two things about what was just said. Number one, I was indoctrinated into the Democratic Party at a very early age. And what I do find really refreshing about this election is that it's the first election in my lifetime. I'm 50 years old, and every election was the most important election of our lifetime. And every 4 years, my mother told me, this is the greatest leader in the world. John Kerry is going to save Western civilization. Michael Dukakis is going to be a hero for all the world. And so I love that this is the first election where they're like, yeah, well, he's a little old. He's a little out of it. Just hold your nose and take it. You know, I love that it's the first time that the leaders, the grand leaders of the party aren't saying, come on, everybody, this is it. You know, we all are a little more honest about, okay, now we know, okay, we know what we're getting, and we're just going to kind of just hope for Kamala. That's all you have to do is just like hold your nose and you're getting Kamala out of the deal. Okay? Part one. The second thing I wanted to say about what she said is that I really worry not about election day. Like when you ask what's going on in your bubble, like I live in a liberal bubble and I don't know anybody who's even excited to vote for the Democratic nominee. So I'm with you on the whole, like they were for Bernie all along, and I get that. But what I worry about is the day after the election, because you know that half of America is not going to be happy no matter who wins, right?
Sure.
So if Trump gets reelected, my neighborhood will be on fire. There will be, you know, looting and crazy. It'll be, forget about it. But if Biden wins, the other half of America is going to be, you know, out there in the streets. They're not just going to take it. So I'm worried about what's going to happen after this, because I know you want to be positive, optimistic. But from my perspective, having spent way too much time in what they call real America, I'm afraid that what we're going to see after 2 weeks from today is going to be just, oh, God. This is like we're ripping off a Band-Aid and the genie is out of the bottle and it's just it's all just going to explode. That's my worst fear.
And I hear you on that. I totally hear you on that. And again, I know I'm like a relentless optimist or whatever. But at the same time, I don't want us to Y2K this situation. You know, I don't want us to just keep talking about some shit that's going to happen. And then the day comes and it doesn't happen, because the thing that we've done so many, many, many times before is elections, right? Like we've done this before. before. This isn't something we've like, never done before. We're trying it out for the first time. We've literally done this exact thing before, and Americans have not lost their minds. And so I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say, oh, that's not a possibility or whatever. Obviously, everything's a possibility. But I don't want to play. I don't want to say that violence is way more a possibility now than it ever was before, because that also doesn't make sense. We've had so many elections.
But we didn't have social media feeding us these toxic feeds of, you know, our own ideology.
And we'll get into that. We'll get into that in topic number two. But
okay,
do tell us what American Selfie is about.
Oh, okay. Let's talk more about me, because I really don't think we've talked enough about me.
Oh, by the way, for people who may not know why you were indoctrinated so early, it's because your mother is Nancy Pelosi. I just want to like clear
that
up.
Why'd you have to bring that up?
I just want to clear
it
up.
You're losing half your audience right there.
Okay.
Boom. All right. Because their social media feed has told them to hate that name. So you just lost. I don't know why you did that to yourself. That was self-sabotaging.
Not fake the nation listeners.
Okay.
you're in very friendly waters.
No, because then there's the other side. There's the real left that will hate you. So you can't win. In this political climate, there's really like, it's such an insane niche environment that you're.
No, I know. It is a constant tightrope walk.
Yeah. Okay. So
American Selfie.
What I did was I went out. Now, as you know, I've been doing this a really long time and I made a lot of these movies. So every 4 years, it seems to be, this is the beat I'm on. Go out and make a film where you talk to the American people about taking the temperature of how they feel in an election year. So the concept was I went out a year ago and I started going to these iconic events that really defined America at that moment in time to talk to people about how do you feel about America right now. And hopefully what I accomplished was I created this little artifact of America in 2020 so that, you know, when I walk outside my door here at Union Square, there's a huge clock that says there are only 7 good years left on this earth. It countdowns the days, the hours, the minutes. So knowing that we only have 7 good years left on the earth, the idea is that like in 8 years from now, the aliens that come and inhabit our planet will say like, what happened to these Americans? And oh, this is what it was. They can pull this off the shelf and it will show be like, that's what happened to America. They just shot themselves, right?
Yeah.
And that's, yeah. So what was your question?
That's very dark. So that's what the movie is about.
Well, I went to all the things that, you know, so I started off at the Apple store where people were lining up to buy the new iPhone because they all wanted to take these selfies of themselves looking so perfect and to project the illusion of their happy lives when really we know we're all so broken and sad inside. Well, maybe not you, but, you know, all these girls, young sorority girls that take these perfectly posed, you know, manicured pictures falling off the side of the Grand Canyon just to get the perfect shot, right? And the idea was at that same day, as that new iPhone was coming out, there was the global climate march in the same town, the same time. It seemed so upstairs, downstairs to me. And the irony of that was not lost. It seemed so funny. And so I was trying to make the point in each scene of like, there's this upstairs, downstairs that like people are lining up at 5 a.m. to get a new iPhone.
It's very Remains of the Day.
Yes. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Good. Can I put that on the poster? That's a good endorsement. So anyway, so that's the whole thing. It's like I have this whole sort of fascination with how, so I went to these things that are supposed to be these iconic things like the Super Bowl, because remember the San Francisco 49ers made it to the Super Bowl and there were tons of people there wearing Colin Kaepernick jerseys. So, you know, let's not all be so shocked when we hear about, you know, injustice. It's not as if it wasn't there and we didn't talk about, it wasn't being talked about. We just pretended. We just like closed our eyes and pretend we didn't hear it. So I was trying to get people to talk about these things long before when I was making fun of all those little tarts that were standing in line buying their iPhones. What I didn't anticipate when I started the film, which I love, the nice dramatic twist, was that one of those little girls, a 17-year-old girl named Darnella Frazier, took that little toy and turned it into a weapon, and she filmed the George Floyd murder.
Nice.
And that's what sparked the revolution. So I have to say, like, as dark and as cynical as I look at the world, because I'm a dark cloud, the opposite of you, I thought it was a beautiful thing that this little girl ended up being sort of the iconic, like if you're going to give out a documentary Oscar for best documentary of the year, has to go to the 17-year-old girl that filmed the murder that we could all watch from beginning to end, because we'd all seen, we all knew this was happening, but it wasn't until we had to watch it from beginning to end that we knew, oh, we can't make any excuses any longer. We have to pay attention to this. And that's why you see in my neighborhood, like all white Black Lives Matter protests now marching by.
Right.
You're like, oh, finally white America woke up. Good, I guess, right? They woke up.
And it's so interesting to me that the camera and that footage has that power, because it had that power in the 60s. It wasn't until there was documentation that people sort of woke up, right? And that I think is really what's powerful about cameras, but I still say fuck phones and I hate phones. But cameras are great. can they just be cameras? And then everyone has a camera in their pocket, but it's not connected to a phone.
I think it's not just cameras. It's that not only was it filmed, but everyone, including who had never really been in a position to be empathetic to that before, had been locked in their homes for a few months and were being told that they couldn't do something, and then saw something where they were like, oh, wait a minute. This is happening to a group of people who have been told for eons, seemingly, that they can't do anything. And I think that was really what the spark was. Because, I mean, you know, it unfortunately was down to timing. You know, a thing that I've been saying around the house constantly is, well, it took a pandemic. Like, you know, it took a pandemic for me to rearrange my closet. It took a pandemic, you know, things like that to look into rental insurance or whatever. And
Right.
So unfortunately, it took a pandemic to get people to stop and actually see this injustice. And I feel like it's taking a pandemic, perhaps, for people to be realistic about the presidential choices, like Alexander was saying. Yeah.
And not to be practical. And I don't think there's anything sad or, you know, negative about being practical. You know what I mean? Like, we all make practical choices all the time. I wear shoes without heels, guys. And so, like, every day I'm weighing practical options, and I don't find them degrading or sad or demoralizing. And I think, you know, to choose to, I'm more enthusiastically voting for Biden. He wasn't my candidate in the primaries, but I'm still enthusiastically voting for him because I am excited about the practicality of that presidency. We haven't had that in a while. I would like to see what that looks like again. That to me is exciting. So, folks, we have to move on to the next topic. But before, and we have to hear from our sponsors, whom we love. And before we do that, I just want to remind everyone, I mentioned we're only doing optimism. T-shirts are available for a limited time. Get yours at podswack.com/fake. And what I think is the cutest is that people are buying them for their curmudgeonly friends who need a dose of optimism on their chests. All right. So let's listen to our sponsors. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about some other things. Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like, we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in like in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that. But we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness for like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/fakethenation will be taken off. That's pros.com/fakethenation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/fakethenation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/fakethenation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back for topic number two. We read a piece in the Times by Emily Bazelon called The Problem of Free Speech in an Age of Disinformation. And in it, she talked about how lies and conspiracy theories sort of effortlessly move through American media. And your film seems to touch on this a little bit too, Alexandra, which have a deleterious effect and
it's forcing some scholars to question our faith in free speech and minimal government regulation of speech. She lays out a lot of scenarios in which false content gets posted and shared. And then, you know, for example, there was an article claiming that Democrats were laying the groundwork for a revolution. And that ended up being the most shared article, one of the most shared articles in extremist websites. What does that make you think about how information is spread and the sort of freedom with which it spreads? Shalewa?
It's kind of news to me to see it in practice. Like, I read about this type of stuff all the time.
Right.
But it takes like I had a tweet go viral like last year or something. And it went viral in a way where both people on the left and the right saw their side in it.
Saw it.
And so it was retweeted by some horrible person.
Do you remember what the tweet was?
Yeah, it was about the governor of Virginia when the blackface thing. Yes. And so what I tweeted was, when we said we wanted more black faces in government, we should have been specific. That was it.
Yeah. So that's very funny.
So that really engaged people on both sides. And I kind of was like, well, who are these? I see a lot of MAGA people. Let me see how they use Twitter, because I am not privy to it at all. And so I kind of just looked through and was surprised at how Twitter was being used by them and towards them. And it's just wild to see it in practice. And I just, and now, and you know, that was like a year or so ago. Now, you know, again, fevered pitch. And I'm on Facebook and I'm looking at like family members posting things. And I'm like, check your source. And I'm like, you don't know to check your source. It just comes in. You know what I mean? You don't, how do I have a conversation with my 70-year-old uncle that like, maybe that's not the place. You know what I mean? Like, what did the pop-up ads look like when they came up? You know what I mean? Or how free was that? It's hard to have that conversation. I just want everyone to have that conversation of just like breaking things down. But then when you're trying to do that with someone who you don't necessarily agree with, they're just going to think that you're trying to pull them over to the other side because everything they've seen has told them that that's what you're going to try to do. So I mean, it's tiring having to sift through a lot of that. And I understand why you'd just be exhausted and let it wash over you. But I mean, this is the second time, y'all, come on. How are you not? But then again, you're not in the place where you want to. Also, people see what they want to see.
Alexandra, in the piece, Bazelon claims that, quote, the spewing of falsehoods isn't meant to win any battle of ideas. Its goal is to prevent the actual battle from being fought by causing us to simply give up. Does that sound ring true for you? That it's that there's so much shit out there. It's not that, you know, we're moved by the opinions. False claims. We just get tired. So we just retreat.
The one thing that I did discover, having traveled the whole country for a year, is that no matter who you're going to vote for, everyone universally said social media is destroying the public conversation.
Wait, so the right said that and the left said that?
Yes. Everybody said social media is destroying our democracy. And unchecked bad information is going out. And everybody blames somebody. You know, everyone puts it on somebody else. But the truth is that these people and their toxic media feeds is ruining relationships, ruining families, ruining. I mean, it's all the evidence is clear that this is really dark. But then when you take it to the place of like, now we're going to kidnap the governor. You know, what worries me more is that, you know, I told you I was raised in a family where public service was a noble calling. That was sort of a catchphrase. Like, we trust, even if they're Republicans or even if they're, you know, whoever they are, we think that being a public servant is a noble thing. And now it's been so, this president shit all over the concept of political life, right? That we're going to go kidnap the governor. You know, that's really dangerous stuff. I remember one time there was a man arrested across the street from our house, and he was there, I guess, to kill Nancy Pelosi. And then when the media went and interviewed his mom, he she said, well, he was just watching too much Fox News. He watched so much Fox News, he started to really hate Nancy Pelosi. And I was like, well, and it drove him to want to go kill her. So this stuff does get really dangerous at some point. You know, it's one thing to say it's just doing it to the point to get us to lull us into, you know, not participating. How about when it gets us?
Yeah, we saw that with Pizzagate as well.
Right, exactly. And the fact that you even, like, listen to this. So I have teenage boys, and one of them actually, and I'm always saying to them, what if we're wrong? We have to keep an open mind. You know, you always have to keep them. So one day one of them says to me, so Hillary Clinton had a pedophile ring in a pizza parlor. I'm like, you're 12. Like, what? Like, how could you be telling me
that?
Because kids don't know.
Yeah.
You know, kid, they get this stuff in their feeds and they start to, I mean, they don't know.
Yeah.
What you have to worry about is like the damage it's doing to the mental health of the next generation because they don't know any better. I mean, we're grownups in theory. Yeah. We're supposed to know better. But the next generation, you got to worry about how fucked they
are. There's a movie called Eighth Grade. I don't know if you guys saw that movie, but it's fantastic, and it sort of shows the mental health toll, right, of like the posting, what they do, these adolescent girls. It's also really funny and like just a great funny movie, but also really painful and weird at times, you know, because I didn't grow up with that. I didn't grow up with social media, so I don't know what it means. Shalewa, one of the things that came up in this piece, which I thought was really interesting, I mean, which is sort of a long-standing issue, is that we protect hate speech, right? Mm-hmm. We protect it in this country. They don't protect it, for example, in France and Germany. There's different like categories in which you can't be a Holocaust denier. That's not something you're allowed to do in Germany, for example, or in France. I might be confusing them, or both. But here in the United States, we've long protected hate speech. The Supreme Court is constantly basically ruling on this as recently. I mean, I think as 2012, they're always ruling that like, no, it's even though it sucks that these things are said, we protect all forms of speech. Should we be protecting all forms of speech?
Well, if we are going to continue to sing this song about everybody is welcome here, then I guess we are supposed to. I mean, to not do so means to take a stand that, frankly, I'm not sure America's ready to take, even though we are being pushed in that direction. Like, hey, look, these are terrible things that have happened in this country since y'all started setting things up. Are you going to speak out against it? Because are you going to take a stand and say, no, we don't like that? Because if that stand is taken, then we are going to have to do major shifts that I don't even think people are thinking of, like what is considered hate speech now.
It's so ingrained.
Yeah.
It's so ingrained. It would be a really, really tough change. But I think, you know, as someone, I'm an Iranian-American Muslim, as everybody knows, and I bristle at like any kind of infringement on speech because I'm, you know, my parents are from a country. And when you're in Iran, you definitely feel that you don't have freedom of speech.
Right. Like,
that's a feeling that everybody has. You have it when you're on the block having a chat, right? That's what it feels. You know, authoritarian regimes are very good at making you know that you don't have free speech. And I've always bristled at that, but it turns out that it's not authoritarian. So our speech issues are not with authoritarianism. It's not like, you know, any kind of change in free speech would affect our speech in the way that authoritarian regimes do, right? It would just sort of limit this, I think. There's something that I think needs to happen, some sort of regulation of the internet, where the constant lying, like I'm almost like okay with hate speech. It's constant published lying that I'm not okay with. And it's from this sort of deregulated space of the internet. We're this guinea pig generation where Facebook, Google, YouTube, you know, are not, Twitter, are not, we don't understand what they are. Like, are they publishers? Are they whatever? This has been a longstanding question. In Europe, they're figuring that out more quickly than us because we protect speech so heavily here. But we're also, that means that we're letting lies go and corrupt minds and lead to kidnapping plans of governors, right? And so I think there's a way of knowing, of protecting the free speech that we know, but having the same kind of rules that you have on cable, or the same kind of rules that, you know, you cannot go on television and just spew whatever, like, that's, you know, there are rules. And so I think that if we sort of view the internet as a public service in that way, there are ways that we can control it. And I'm totally talking out of my own outside of my understanding of how the law works there. But this is something, you know, this is something that I think is plaguing us.
Yeah. So are you saying that we should just, for those who are compelled to share lies?
I would say don't do it.
mess with the young brains that haven't been formed yet, because those things are targeted to young men, you know, because they're on there playing the game. Here you go. Here's a little something for you. So are we going to kick that old school? Are we going back to pamphlets with that? Like, if we put the rules on... You know what I mean? Are we back to just riding on a scooter and yelling out your wrong thoughts and plans?
I mean,
how do we
do this? That's the thing, is like, you can have a sort of Nazis marching in Skokie, right? Remember that famous case? Mm-hmm. And it's journalists covering the Nazis marching in Skokie, right? So there's a filter by which we're getting the information of Nazis marching in Skokie.
Right.
That is lacking in the internet. And that's what I feel like we need to sort of institute. And hey, legal scholars who listen to Fake the Nation, I know you all do. Let me know what I'm talking about. Can someone tell me what I'm talking about? That would be great.
Well, what you're talking about is capitalism. And really what you're exposing is that it doesn't really work. You know, these billionaires have built these tech monopolies on the back of, like, you know, teenage boys' mental health. And we've let it happen. And so it's just another example of how I know we have to defend capitalism at all costs, but really, it doesn't seem sustainable. I mean, if you look at the wealth gap and you look at all the inequality, and then you think, I don't know that any of this, like, I know that we have to make our forefathers, founding fathers proud, and we have to just keep this going the way, I guess, it was supposed to be set up, and we have to just marry that. But I'm not sure. I mean, I remember the first time I heard the word socialism at a Sarah Palin rally, and I was shocked that they would use a word like that. But now we're at the point where, like, let's face it, this capitalism thing, it's dead. It's not working. And so this is part of that, because you're talking about who are the war profiteers. If we're in the wartime president, we're at war and all
right,
that.
Right, yeah,
who are
sure.
they?
Yeah.
They're these big tech companies. So what are we going to do about it?
What are we going to do about it? Legal scholars, can someone email me and tell me what we're going to do about it? Thank you. Let us move on to our little mini segment called Races to Watch. I have been getting emails from people at Fake the Nation telling me about races in their area that they are concerned about looking at. We just want to amplify those races. We heard from Saga in Long Island, or Sega. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your name. My name is Nagin. It happens to me all the time. New York's first congressional district. This is in Long Island. Nancy Goroff is running against the incumbent Lee Zeldin. And you know, Saga points out that even though it's a district in New York, we have a Republican congressperson. Nancy Goroff has taught at Stony Brook University. She was a chair in the chemistry department. She's a person of science and politics, which would be really, really helpful right now during this global pandemic. And I just want to point everyone out the fact that there are swing districts among us. If you're in a blue state, and I get emails all the time, like, I'm in a blue state, what do I do? Guess what? There's a swing district just next to you. So you don't have to travel to another state to make an impact. Look at Nancy Goroff if you're in New York first, but also look at swing left. And you can see where those swing districts are near you. They have a fantastic state-by-state plan on swing left, and I highly recommend. Early voting starts October 24th here in New York State. So, let's get rid of Zeldin. Let's get Nancy Goroff in there. Let's change let's keep strengthening our numbers in the House. Daniel wrote to us and pointed out that he voted early in the suburbs of Dallas. It only took 15 minutes. I love the sound of that. Keep an eye on Texas, he writes. We only have to flip 9 statehouse seats to redraw the congressional districts and ungerrymander the state. Everyone's talking about Texas this week. So go look at Texas. Beto O'Rourke has been doing a thing with a million calls in Texas. So just, you know, there's so many efforts you can join. If you're concerned about Texas, take a look at Texas. And in Ohio, Democrats need to net just 2 flipped seats to break the GOP's supermajority in the chamber. Look at Monique Smith in House District 16 in Ohio. And sorry, folks, I've been getting so many emails and I feel that I've missed some of them because I get them on different platforms. So if you have races to watch, please send them to me. The best way to do it is send them at comments@fakethenation.com. Of course, send them wherever you can and I'll try my very best to get to kind of collate them. But comments@fakethenation.com is the best one. Let us move on to topic number 3. Okay, cities. They're amazing. I love living in them. And yet there's always something amiss about that. And that's because of all the great cities and towns and villages of all of the earth were designed by men. You know, and they've got that big dick energy. And sometimes you're like, that's not what I need when I'm pushing a stroller across the street. So there's a feminist design collective in Barcelona that decided to take a different approach to urban planning. And they did a huge study to figure out what cities would look like and what they should look like. And they started implementing some of those designs. What would it look like if the designs had the input of the entire community, including the 51% of the population that is women? I mean, what they're doing is amazing. And before I get into what they're doing in this crazy, you know, these crazy, beautiful attempts here in Barcelona, tell me if you've ever noticed anything about city design that has struck you as particularly male-centric. Have either of you noticed anything?
Gosh, I don't know what is a grid system male centric. I mean, it seems to make sense to me.
Oh, are you saying you want women want like tampon centered design on their city street?
No, I don't. No, I like a grid.
That's the Larry the Cable Guy joke of response.
Yeah, just any. I do not care about your gender, but I do care about getting to someplace in an orderly fashion. So I don't care who's designing that.
Yes.
Statues are an issue, I feel like. That could be switched.
Yeah, a lot of war praise, you know. That seems very male-centric. Yeah, yeah, sure.
A lot of war praise. You know what? Where I grew up in Atlanta, there is a subdivision. And I don't know if it's still there and still named this. But it was named after, I think the TV show was Gunsmoke. Right. And so the name of the ranch was the Ponderosa. So there was a subdivision named the Ponderosa, and all of the streets in the subdivision were named after characters on the show. And I would like to see a little more whimsy like that.
Right, right, right. That was fun.
And I don't know if a dude thought of that or not, but I'd like to see, you know, just more fun things like that instead of, say, which Eurocentric man came to that area
and fucking pissed on it, and now he's got a sign. Yeah.
And pissed on it, and now that's just the name of this whole neighborhood.
Can I say in defense of I think it's Philadelphia, a lot of their streets are named after tree types.
Tree types is popular. Or dare I say poplar. I'm so sorry.
Come on, everybody. And the show has been canceled. It's over for that one. Alexandra, male-centered design, have you encountered that in your life?
I live in New York City, so I go with avenues and streets, so I'm okay with that. But I do think that you make the point that the names, because there's, you know the names. Women don't, I can't think of, and bridges, airports. Can you think of one airport that's named after a woman? Can you think of one? I mean, there aren't really many bridges I can think of that were named after a woman. But every man in the world has a bridge named after them, right? You didn't have to do much.
Can I? There's an effort that I'm a part of to get the Williamsburg Bridge renamed to the Sonny Rollins Bridge. And it's because Sonny Rollins, who's a famous jazz musician, black man, he practiced on that bridge every day for hours. And so look at the Sonny Rollins Bridge Project. I know it's another man, but it's a musician, a black musician man, which feels like a market improvement from War Guys. I've long thought, like, what a beautiful way to commemorate a bridge that, like, a musician uses bridge in the making of his craft and the advancement of jazz and as an art form in general. And you know, Sonny Rollins is a really well-regarded jazz musician. But yeah, I agree the naming of stuff. Well, let me tell you a little bit about this, what the study found in Spain. So they found a few areas, where it seemed like, women were completely left out of the conversation. So for example, toilets.
Public bathrooms.
Public bathrooms. What a nightmare. So women have to use toilets more because our urethras are shorter. So we pee more often, which I actually didn't totally realize was a biological truth fact that we pee more often. But we do. Plus we use bathrooms more often because we have menstrual cycles. So there's just a lot of dealing with the area that we have to do, and we need more public bathrooms to do it. And here's the other thing about public bathrooms, they're hard to use because oftentimes, especially older ones, were not designed to get a stroller inside. So if you're me, I've been in really weird situations where I've had a baby who can't sit up or walk, and I've held her in my arms as I've also tried to squat over a toilet, you know, because I can't get the stroller inside the thing, and I'm obviously not going to leave my baby outside to fend for herself. So it's, you know, that has been a really frustrating thing. I say, get some women up in toilet design. In theory, women's bathrooms should be 3 times the size of men's to accommodate for all of this.
That's true. And hooks. That's just my own personal public bathroom. Hooks everywhere.
Middle of winter, you're taking a coat off. Where do you put it if there isn't a hook?
Yeah, where am I putting my bag? Come I know on. I didn't pay a lot for the tote bag, but I know I'm not putting it on a pissy-ass floor.
Yes, the worst.
Give me a hook.
Yes,
that's all.
The hooks, please. Those are so cheap. We can do that today.
They're so cheap.
These are attainable dreams. Here's another one. Moving around in the city, in this Spanish study, they found that women walk more and use public transit more. Men use cars more. So women's mode of transportation is actually more sustainable. You're welcome, Mother Earth. And in Barcelona, 60% of public spaces are taken up by cars. I actually think it's more in New York City. I remember reading a number here in New York City about the percentage of public spaces taken up by cars, which means men basically get to use more public space, which sucks. And so as a result, they're building these super blocks in Barcelona. They've already built 6 of them with plans to do 500. And in these super blocks are like a collection of blocks where they cut them off from cars, private cars, unless you have special access that you need to get on the block or whatever. And if you do, you have to go 10 miles an hour. And parked cars go underground. So you don't, you're not seeing parked cars all over the place. And it's and the idea is to create spaces for people to walk, to be, you know, to be good pedestrians and cyclists and to just hang out. Is that something you would like to see?
I think that's something people would expect in a city anyway.
Yeah.
But depending on a densely populated city.
Right.
And ones where the city is more sprawled out, that is definitely going to take a lot of convincing. Again, I grew up in Atlanta, and a lot of major areas in Atlanta don't have a sidewalk. Like, yeah. That's how important the car is.
Yes.
No sidewalk. Bus stops. There's a bus stop, but I'm standing on the side. Yeah, I'm standing on the side of a hill. So anything to help walking around in a city would, I think, be ideal. And also, I think of the safety measures that are necessary for that. You know, I'll ride a train, but I just want to know that if something happens and I got to ring a bell or yell right. that whoever is coming, that first someone is coming. And then whoever is coming will be of help, will be of service. I mean, it's a little, I don't know. It's a little pipe dreamy, but, I would hope that's what
it is. And I'll tell you why, because in the study, one of the things that they planned was machismo stands. So they basically set up these machismo stands in I think like in high kind of nightclub, bar, cafe areas. And you can go there and get information, blah, blah, blah. But you can also alert them about creepy behavior, sexual assault, anything that might have happened to you, you can tell them. And they use that information. First of all, they help you. But then they also use that information to create a map of where that kind of creepy sexual assault behavior, just creepy behavior is happening. And then they use that to kind of figure out where to deploy law enforcement, blah, 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 blah. They use that information in a lot of of different ways. And so that's interesting because it's basically something that they thought about in this study, is having ways that women can get help.
Yeah, that's that would be super important. It's basically, it sounds like it's just the whisper network amplified.
Yes,
a little bit.
No, exactly, exactly.
Because I mean, we, you know, if you're out enough, you know which bar has the creeps, and then you just have to decide if that's what you're feeling that night. So don't shut them down. Sometimes you need a creep, but
right.
You know, you also still need to know that someone from one of these machismo,
machismo stands. Yeah. There was a bar, there was a club that I used to go to all the time, but it was, I only went if we were a group of four or more, you know what I mean? Cause it was super mm-hmm. fun, but you had to have like, a bunch of, support.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And so,
just big bachelorette party energy is right. what you need.
Right, okay. right. Mm-hmm. Alexandra, what do you think of this idea of sort of killing the car? That's something that the study talked about, is that like a lot of what they found in this study of women-centered design is that they want to kill the car. They want there to be more spaces to cycle and hanging out.
Yeah. I mean, I have a fantasy that the silver lining of this whole sort of New York is dead narrative would be that, you know, all the assholes with like cars and drivers will leave. And then what we'll have is, I mean, I think Uber put so many cars on the streets, right? Because everyone yeah. was like, I can take the subway for $2.75, but for like $5, I could take an Uber. So anyone that could afford that extra $2 or something went and gotten an Uber, put so many more cars on the street. And the only people left on the subway
horrible.
Were the people that couldn't afford to get an Uber.
But also who recognized that Uber was still slower than the subway.
Yeah, but everyone wanted to feel like a rock star. Everybody
right.
wanted to show up in their own car and driver.
Right.
And I just have always thought that as an island, it should not allow cars, period. I've never understood why, like, you'll see big trucks delivering to grocery stores and stuff during the day. I'm like, couldn't they do that overnight? Again, it all comes back to capitalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the dollar always wins. So the companies get to do whatever they want whenever they want to do it. And it feels like there are a lot of things like, okay, I need my car because I have to. Okay, some hours could be for that, but it would be a fantasy that the island or that New York City could become more. I'm in the cult of City Bike. So
yes,
I love the bicycle.
Yeah.
And so I think, it's a dream. It's a dream that, you know, one day we will be able to. And that's the one thing that's great about that outdoor dining scene. Everyone says that New York City's dead. And if you walk out the door where I live,
it's
like Mardi Gras. It's never been so alive. Everybody's out.
It's Mardi Gras with low rates of transmission. You know
right.
what I mean? It's like, it's safe and Mardi Gras at the same time.
You make the point.
Yeah,
good point
really
that
fun.
You have a better chance of getting a disease at Mardi Gras than you would here right now at this moment in time in New York City. So yeah, no, I mean, I think that it would be nice. It would, and it'd be nice. I have a Dutch husband, so I have this whole like other world where he's constantly cursing at New York City for being so, you know, stubborn in its like old fashioned, like not, it can't adapt, has no sort of, it doesn't evolve. It's sort of just like, we've always had big trucks parked in the bike lane, and that's what we do. And I think that's a failure of our mayor, really. But let's not go there. Let's not go on a rant.
Well, I love this idea of female-centered design and how it would change cities, but also villages and towns. I mean, what is it about your city that you wish had a little bit more, more female input? People of Fake the Nation, let me know. Hit me up. I'm so curious. And you folks have probably figured out by now I love talking about this shit, so hit me up. Now, here we are. We're at the end of the show, and I'd like to add, you know, we're in a very particular time. We're less than 2 weeks out from the election day. We're already voting, though. Election season. It's already happening. It's so exciting. Democracy. It's literally occurring right this very moment. What is keeping you both hopeful? Who wants to go first?
Wait, can I take a pass on that one? Do we have to?
No. You need to force yourself to have a hopeful thought. You'll actually feel better. We all will.
Oh, my God. Give me some time. How much time do we have? Okay, hold on.
Shalewa will start us off here. Shalewa, what is making you feel hopeful?
Oh, boy. What is keeping me hopeful? I don't know exactly what it is, but somehow I am. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at everything laid out in front of me, And I'm like, yeah, this all looks like the biggest mess in the world. That's my default. This is all horrible. And then, you know, I think about, you know, it's a little cheesy, but I think about, all right, well, look, we're not, I mean, my parents went to colored only bathrooms.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So I'm like, all right, so like, let's really put this in perspective for me and my people. This is not a good look for us. But for the first time, I feel like maybe someone is listening to us say, hey, this is wild that this has been going on for this long. I mean, already some of that stuff has been rolled back, but I feel like it may still kind of push forward. And I'm hopeful in that regard. I'm hopeful in that, younger people have really, like, the scales have fallen from their eyes, if they even developed any, and they are really seem to be seeing things as they are in a way that I wasn't necessarily trained to do, because I'm Gen X, so I'm just supposed to not trust anything and then just, like, try to maneuver around it. But young people really seem to they also seem to be hopeful and not immediately trustful, but also trying to figure out how to work with things. And that's kind of nice to see. And I kind of want to see where they're going to take it for a hot second.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Okay, I came up with something. Okay.
Alexandra. Okay,
so
let's hear it.
At the beginning of 2020, I took my kids to Selma to march with John Lewis for the commemoration of Bloody Sunday. And then we went to the Lynching Museum and we heard Bryan Stevenson. And, you know, it's almost like you have to teach young white boys their history, right? And you have to say, look at this embarrassing past that this country had, right? And now I'm going to steal her line and say, and it takes a pandemic, because Kamala Harris was there marching that day. And it took a pandemic to get to the point where we're saying, you know what? We could have the first woman of color as the vice president. And let's face it, the old guy's old. And so, you know, how long will that last? So you can look at it really in a hopeful, like, if you're looking at the arc of history, you could say in the arc of history, the first woman of color as vice president, balls, right? So that's pretty good right there.
Yeah. How exciting is it to cast your vote for the first woman of color vice president on a ticket?
Yeah. Yeah. You certainly want to be a part of that. Don't be on the losing end of that, y'all. Come on.
I mean...
Don't make me have to roast you because you picked the wrong thing. Come on. You know what? We gave the angry white man, we gave y'all your 4 years to try and have your little death throes and just freak out. And now, like, we can't do this anymore. We gotta keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Right. And you can also say that everything this year got so bad that you can't criticize a woman of color right now. It would be, just can't, right? But if we hadn't had the year we had, just imagine what kind of campaign she would have gone through.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Just think about
exactly
it. The amount of hate and the amount of, right? So we didn't have to hear that because it was like, we can't, we gotta
keep that.
We could just lock our racism, you know, at home. So I just feel like at least that is something that's a positive. I'm going optimist. See, I'm turning into an optimist
now. Hey, we're only doing optimism. Alexandra might join the the team.
I'm buying the t-shirt. I'm buying the t-shirt.
I mentioned Jamal, this guy on my block earlier, but what's making me so hopeful is we've had this conversation every day, like maybe five different times in the last 10 days, where he's like, wait, what is the day where I get to go early vote? Like, he's so cannot wait. I'm like, October 24th. He's like, right. And just, he's like, remind me if I miss the day. And I was like, no, I'm going to remind you. I see you all the time. Like, this is happening, you know? And he's like, and every day, wait, what day is it? Which day is it? It's the 24th, October 20th. And that makes me so hopeful. There's Jamal is your neighbor. You know what I mean? In the large sense, Jamal is your neighbor. He is there. He is waiting. He is excited. He's a new citizen. He can't wait. He is so excited to exercise this right. And he's a great neighbor. And sometimes he walks my dog when I'm away. So that is the kind of neighbor that you have in America. We have these people. So let's, like, remember them. As we close the show, I would love for the people of Faith Nation to be able to follow you both and follow what you do. Shalewa, where do you do your things? Where should they follow you?
Oh, I'm on all of the important social media, at Silky Jumbo. All one word, traditional spelling. Whatever. A thing that I've been doing lately, my roommate and I have been locked in our apartment for a while, and we're getting along fine. So I've been doing taste tests of various foods. Ooh. So if you go to my Instagram account and on my IGTV, you can see where we've done a taste test of Kit Kats and chips. And we did 13 flavors of Triscuits last week. And I am still working my way through that.
Okay.
So
digestible.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing for fun. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, Silky Jumbo on whatever. Just put that in there and you'll find me.
Alexandra Pelosi, where do they find you and remind them about your movie?
Okay, so I have a movie airing on Showtime on Friday night, but then we'll be streaming after that. It's called American Selfie, One Nation Shoots Itself. I'm not on any social media because I just don't have the stomach for it, so I apologize. But I will go check out which is the best Triscuit because I'm dying to know.
The answer may surprise you.
All right, that's a tease. Wow, I'm excited.
Folks, you know where to find me. Check out my new article in The Progressive. It's called No Time to Panic. And I argue about having a nuanced approach to what may happen. And like what we were talking about earlier, we've done elections before, so we don't need to have a complete meltdown over what this one might look like. And also, I should mention, I made a short film. It's called The Morning Papers. Morning is in grief, and yet it's a comedy. The Morning Papers is an official selection of the San Diego Asian Film Festival, so support that festival. I screened at that festival with my very first movie as a producer, like many, many years ago. And they're so lovely. They're so wonderful. And I want festivals to survive. I want festivals to survive the pandemic. So support the San Diego Asian Film Festival that gives you a slate of films from people of color. And wouldn't it be nice to support those filmmakers as well? What? I know. You can buy tickets. It's October 23rd to the 31st. You get a ticket and then you have all that time to see a bunch of movies. So definitely support them and check out my piece in The Progressive. And what I really would like to do is thank all of the people who make this show possible. And oh my God, they do it under the most ridiculous circumstances. That's our producer, Anita Flores, our audio engineer, Andy Christens, and Caitlin Moldenauer. Gabi Alter wrote our theme music, and Lily Fleshler helps out with research. We love hearing from you, as you know, so send us your feedback on topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005. Or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, please favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps other people find the show. We'll be back in your earballs. Democracy is happening. Bye, and thank you.